shoe, and now when I can, you wear shorts.
What?
I play with him. My legs look different in a skirt?
No, they look great either way.
He leans in, the beer on his breath making me wince a little. I just can't stick my hand up a pair of shorts. And then he tries to, as if proving a point. I knock his hands away.
Yeah, the thing is,
I say, a boy whines. A man doesn't let anything get in his way, shorts or no shorts. His eyes fall down my body and raise again, boring into mine.
I want to take you out.
Yeah, I know what you want. Trey's been flirting for a while, and I know exactly what's on his mind. And it isn't dinner and a movie. If I give him an inch, he'll take a mile. I may not need a ring on my finger to have fun with someone, but I also don't want to be a notch on his belt. So I don't give in to him. But I don't reject him, either. I know what happened to the last girl who did that.
You want it, too.
He shoots back, his wide shoulders and hard chest crowding me in.
I'm the shit, baby, and I always get what I want. It's only a matter of time.
I stare right through his ego, seeing a guy who toots his own horn because he's either afraid others won't do it for him, or he needs to remind himself how awesome he is. Trey Burrows is a house of bricks balancing on a toothpick. Something brushes my calf, and I look down just in time to see Ten crawling out from under the gaming booth. I move out of the way and push Trey back, noticing that Ten holds something in his hand.
I got a sword, he says, waving the plastic inflatable in front of us.
Trey snickers.
Yeah, me too.
And I swallow the bad taste in my mouth at his crude joke. He turns away, growing quiet, his attention immediately drawn up to the Ferris wheel. So easily distracted, so easily bored.
Tell you what, I say, speaking to Trey as I stroll over and hook an arm through Ten's.
I'll let you take Ten home. Trey jerks his head over his shoulder, looking at me like I'm crazy.
And then you can take me home.
I finish, seeing his eyebrow arch in interest. School ends in 6 weeks. I can fake this a while longer. I don't want to go out with him, but I don't want to wake up tomorrow to a nasty rumor that's not true plastered all over Facebook either. Trey Burrows can be nice, but he can be a real asshole too. A smile pulls at the corner of his mouth, and he turns back around.
All you have to do is catch me,
I tell him, grabbing Ten's hand. So count to 20.
Make it 5,
Ten jokes, backing away with me.
He doesn't know how to count to 20.
My stomach shakes with a laugh, but I hold it back. Trey smirks, staring at me like I'm a meal he wants and nothing is going to stop him. And then he opens his mouth, slowly stepping toward us.
1?
And at that warning, Ten and I spin around and dash for the back of the park. We both laugh as we race down paths thick with wet leaves and fallen branches and whip around broken booths. We pass the Orbiter, Log Flume, and Tornado, which I remember used to play a lot of Def Leppard. The zipper still stands, dark and rusted, and we weave through the old swings, the cold chains brushing against my arms. They squeak, probably giving away our position as I charge after Ten.
In here,
he shouts. I suck in a breath and follow as he dives into a small building that looks like it was meant for employees. Stepping into the darkness, I pull the door closed behind me and wince at the musty air that hits my nose. Ten takes his phone out, lighting the room with his flashlight, and I do the same. The floor is littered with debris, and I hear a drip coming from somewhere. But we don't pause to explore. Ten heads for what looks like a stairwell, rounding the railing and taking a step down.
That's weird. The stairs lead below, underground.
Down there? I breathe out, peering over the steel-green bars and seeing only pitch-black darkness below. Fear creeps in, sending chills down my spine.
Come on.
Ten begins down the steps.
It's only a service tunnel. A lot of theme parks have them.
I pause for a moment, knowing full well that anything could be lurking down there. Animals, homeless people, dead people.
They used to control the animatronics and stuff from down here.
He calls up to me as he descends with his light.
It's a way for the staff to get around the park quickly. Come on.
How the hell would he know all that?
I didn't know theme parks had an underground.
But I can feel the threat of Trey at my back, so I let out a breath and swing around the banister, heading down after Ten.
There are lights on down here,
he says as he reaches the bottom, and I come up behind him, glancing over his shoulder to see what lies ahead. My stomach somersaults,
The long subterranean path is built solely of concrete, a square tunnel about 10 feet wide from side to side and top to bottom. There are scattered puddles, probably from rain runoff, a pipe leak, or maybe cracks in the walls letting in ocean water. They glimmer with the track lighting overhead. A black void looms at the end of the tunnel, and I run my hands up and down my arms, suddenly cold. The lights are probably connected to the city, I say. Maybe they're on all the time. Of course, I have no idea. And why would they be on all the time? But lying to myself makes me feel better. I hear a door slam up above, and I jump, glancing up the stairs for a split second before planting my hand on Ten's back and pushing him forward. Shit, I whisper. Go, go, go! We race down the tunnel, my heart beating against my chest as we pass random doors and more passageways leading off to the sides of the main one we're running down. I stay straight, though, feeling an excited smile creep up despite my fear. I can't help but think if it were Misha chasing us, he wouldn't run after me. But he wouldn't lose, either. He'd find a way to outsmart me. I hear footfalls behind us, and I glance over my shoulder to see a light bobbing down the stairwell. Holding my breath, I grab the back of Ten's t-shirt and yank him into the room on the right. The door is missing, so we swing inside and hide behind the wall, breathing hard as we try to be still.
Careful, babe, Ten says. You're acting like you don't want to be caught.
Yeah, I don't want to be caught. I'd rather be waxed. Every day. Right before a scalding hot salt bath. It's not that I'm not attracted to Trey. He's good-looking and built, so why wouldn't I be? But no, I won't be one of his girls prancing down the hall at school in my skin-tight skirt while he slaps me on the behind and his friends pat him on the back because I'm his newest piece of ass trophy. Insert hair flip and giggle. Not fucking likely. Pressing my head close to the wall, I train my ears, gauging how close he is to us. Did he turn back? Take a side tunnel? But then I narrow my eyes, noticing a faint whine instead, as if there's a mosquito buzzing around the room. Do you hear that? I whisper to Ten. I can't make out his face, but his dark form stills as if listening. And then I see him digging in his jeans for something. A moment passes, and then his phone casts a small glow into the room, and I turn, widening my eyes at the sight of a bed, must-white sheets, and a small table. What the hell? Ten moves farther into the room, getting closer to the bed.
So there is a caretaker on site. Shit.
Well, if there is. I speak low, approaching him as I study the items on top of the sheets. Why didn't he kick us out when we got here? Ten holds up his phone, looking around the room, while I skim over the things on the bedside table and bed. There's a watch on an old black suede cuff laying on top of a picture of what looks like nearly an identical watch. There's also a couple of paperbacks sitting on a pillow, an iPod with headphones attached, and a notebook with a pen lying next to it. I pick up the notebook and flip it over, seeing what looks like a man's writing. Anything goes when everyone knows. Where do you hide when their highs are your lows? So much, so hard, so long, so tired. Let them eat until you're grounded in nothing. Don't you worry your glossy little lips. What they savor eventually loses its flavor. I want to lick while you still taste like you. My chest rises and falls in shallow breaths, and my thighs clench. I want to lick. Damn. A cool sweat spreads down my back as a picture of lips whispering those words against my ear hits me. I've never been much into poetry, but I wouldn't mind more from this guy. A familiar feeling falls over me, though, as I study the tails of the Ys and the sharp strokes of the Ss that look like little lightning bolts. That's weird. But no, the paper is cluttered with writing over more writing and scribbles and scratches. It's a mess. The rest looks nothing like Misha's letters.
Well, I hear Ten's voice mumble at my side. That's creepy.
What? I ask, tearing my eyes away from the rest of the poem and turning my head to look at him. But he's not watching me. I follow to where his flashlight is shining, and I finally see the wall. Dropping the notebook to the bed, I peer up as Ten runs the light over the entire surface. Alone. It's written in large black letters, spray-painted and jagged, each letter nearly as tall as me.
Real creepy, Ten repeats.
I inch backward, glancing around the room and taking it all in. Yeah. Photos on the wall with faces scratched out, ambiguous poetry, mysterious, depressing words written on the wall. Not to mention someone is sleeping in here,
in this abandoned dark tunnel. The distant whine suddenly catches my attention again, and I follow it, leaning down closer to the bed. I pick up the headphones and hold them to my ear, hearing Bleed It Out playing. Shit! I immediately drop the headphones, a breath catching in my throat. The iPod's on, I say, shooting up straight. Whoever he is, he was just here. We need to go, now. Ten moves for the doorway, and I turn away from the bed. But then I stop. Spinning back around, I dip down and rip the page out of the notebook. I have no idea why I want it, but I do. If it is a guy living here, he probably won't miss it anyway. And if he does, he won't know where it went. Go, I tell Ten, nudging his back. And I fold up the page and stuff it in my back pocket. Holding up our phones, we step out of the room and turn left. But just then, someone catches me in their arms, and I yelp as I'm squeezed until I can't breathe.
Gotcha, a male voice boasts. So, how about that ride now?
Trey. Squirming, I pull out of his hold and twist around. Lila, JD, and Bryce stand behind him, laughing.
Damn, Ten shouts, breathing hard. He was obviously caught off guard by their sudden appearance, too.
You might have turned off the flashlights, Lila scolds with a smirk on her face. We could see them as soon as we came down. I move past them, back toward the stairs, ignoring her. If we hadn't been investigating that room, the flashlights on our phones would have been off.
What are you guys doing down here anyway?
JD asks.
Just go, I order, losing patience. Let's get out of here.
Everyone moves ahead, back down the tunnel, and I glance over my shoulder, scanning the nearly pitch blackness and the doorway to the room where we'd just been. Nothing. Dark corners, shadows, dank glimmers from the fluorescent light hitting the puddles of water. I see nothing. But I breathe hard, unable to shake the creepy feeling. Someone is there.
This was not the kind of fun I was thinking of when you guys suggested the cove.
Lila whines, sidestepping the small pools of water. I turn back around, ignoring my fear as I rush up the steps.
Yeah, well, don't worry, I mumble just loud enough for them to hear. The backseat of JD's car isn't far away.
Hell yeah,
JD chuckles, and I resist the urge for one more glance back down the dark tunnel. I climb the stairs, still feeling eyes on me. Chapter 3. Ryan.
Let's go, ladies!
Coach pounds her fists on the lockers twice as she passes by. The girls giggle and whisper around me, and I comb my finger through my hair, sweeping it up into a messy ponytail.
Yeah, I hear they're installing cameras,
Caitlin Steffens says to a group as she sits on the bench.
They're hoping to catch him red-handed.
I roll on some deodorant and toss the container back into my gym bag before checking my lip gloss in the mirror on the locker door.
Cameras, huh? In the school? Good to know.
I pull the top of my cheerleading uniform down over my head, covering my bra, and smooth my shirt and skirt down. We're recruiting new team members since so many of us are graduating soon, so Coach has been asking us to wear our uniforms to school some days to hopefully get more freshmen interested.
I was wondering what their next move was going to be, another girl chimes in. He keeps getting past them.
And I, for one, hope he keeps it up,
Lila adds.
Did you see what he wrote this morning?
Everyone falls silent, and I know exactly what they're looking at. I turn my head, glancing to the wall, right over the doorway to the gym teacher's offices. Flapping ever so gently from the AC blowing out of the vent is a large piece of white butcher paper taped haphazardly to the wall. I smile to myself, my heartbeat picking up pace, and turn back to finish getting ready.
Don't knock masturbation, Mel Long says, reciting the message we all saw laying behind the butcher paper before morning practice a while ago.
It's sex with someone I love.
And everyone starts laughing. I bet they don't even know it's a Woody Allen quote.
They discovered the graffiti this morning, here in the girls' locker room this time, and while the teachers covered it up with paper, everyone saw what was behind it. The school has been vandalized 22 times in the last month, and today makes 23. At first it was slow, one occurrence here and there, but now it's more frequent, nearly every day, and sometimes several times a day. As if the little punk, as he or she has come to be known, has developed a taste for breaking into the school at night and leaving random messages on the walls. Well, I say, hooking my bag over my shoulder and slamming my locker door shut.
With the cameras going in all the hallways and covering every entrance soon, I'm sure he or she will either wise up and quit or get caught. Their days are numbered.
I hope he gets caught, Caitlin says, excitement in her eyes. I want to know who it is.
Boo, Lila pouts. That's no fun. I twist around and head out of the locker room. Yeah, of course it's no fun if Punk gets caught. No one knows what to expect when they come to school in the morning, and it's gotten to the point where the first thing on everyone's agenda is to look for whatever message the vandal has left. They think the intrigue is fun, and while they're curious, Falcon's Well would be just a little bit more tedious without the mystery. Sometimes the messages are serious. I polish up my sheen, but you can't shine shit. Punk. And then everyone is quiet, visibly brushing off the cryptic message as if it's nothing, but you know it's in their heads all day, a thought without a leash. And then sometimes it's comical. FYI, your mom wouldn't date your dad if she could make that choice again. Punk. And everyone laughs. But the next day, I heard several parents called the school because their sons and daughters had given them the third degree to see if it was true. The messages are never signed, and they're never directed to anyone in particular, but they've become anticipated. Who is he? What will he write next? How is he doing it without being seen? And they all assume it's a he and not a she, even though there's no proof it's one or the other. But the mystery buzzes around school, and I'm pretty sure attendance is up just so no one misses what happens next. Strolling up to my locker, I drop my bag to the ground, pulling in a long breath. The sudden weight on my chest makes it a struggle to inhale as I twist the dial on the lock, keying in the combination. My head falls forward, but I snap it back up. Shit. Opening the door, shielding myself for all the eyes around me, I reach under my skirt, under the tight elastic of my spandex shorts, and grab my inhaler. Hey, can I borrow your suede skirt today? I jump, releasing my inhaler and pulling my hand out. Lila stands to my left, while Caitlin and Mel hover at my right. Picking up my backpack, I dig out my books from last night and load them into my locker. You mean the expensive one that I sold half my closet to a consignment shop to pay for? I ask, shoving my books onto the shelf. Not a chance.
I'll tell your mom about all the clothes you hide in your locker.
And I'll tell your mom about all the times you weren't actually sleeping at my house for the night. I retort, smiling as I place my bag on the hook in my locker and look to Caitlin and Mel. The other girls laugh, and I turn back to my locker, retrieving my art notebook and English text for my first two classes.
Please, she begs. My legs look so good in it.
I pull in a breath with everything I have, the struggle to fill my lungs growing like there's 1,000 pounds sitting on my chest. Fine, whatever. Anything to get her out of here. I reach into my locker and pull out the skirt hanging on a plastic hook I'd stuck in the back. I toss the smooth, tan fabric at her. Don't have sex in it. She smiles gleefully, fanning out the skirt to have another look at it.
Thank you.
I grab my small bag, filled with drawing pencils, and my phone.
What do you have right now?
Lila asks, folding the skirt over her arm.
Art?
I nod.
I don't understand how you can't get out of that. I know you hate it.
I close my locker, hearing the bell ring and seeing everyone around us start to hustle. It's almost the end of the year. I'll live. She replies absently, probably having not heard me.
All right, let's go.
She jerks her chin to Mel and Caitlin and then looks to me as she backs away.
See you at lunch, okay? And thank you.
All three of them disappear down the hallway, lost in the throng of bodies as they head for Spanish, their first class of the day. Everyone flits about, rushing upstairs, slamming lockers, and diving into classrooms. And I feel the ache in my chest start to spread. My stomach burns from the strain of trying to breathe, and I make my way down the hallway, my shoulder brushing the lockers for support. I shoot a quick smile to Brandon Hewitt, one of Trey's friends, as I pass, and soon all the doors start to close and the footsteps and chatter fade away. A tiny whistle drifts up from my lungs as my breath shakes from the inside as if little strings are flapping in my throat. I blink hard, the world starting to spin behind my lids. I draw in as much air as I can, knowing they don't see my white knuckles, me clenching my books, or the needles swishing around in my throat like a swizzle stick as I struggle not to cough. I'm good at pretending. The last door closes and I quickly reach under my skirt and pull out the inhaler I usually keep hidden there. Holding it to my mouth, I press down and draw in a hard breath as the spray releases, giving me my medicine. The bitter chemical, which always reminds me of the Lysol I caught in my throat when I was a kid when my mom sprayed it around the house, hits the back of my throat and drifts down my esophagus. Leaning against the wall, I press down once more, drawing in more spray, and I close my eyes, already feeling the weight lifting from my chest. Breathing in and out, I hear my pulse throb in my ears and feel my lungs expand wider and wider, the invisible hands that were squeezing them slowly releasing. This one came quick. Usually it happens while I'm outside or exerting myself. Whenever the air gets thick, I excuse myself to the restroom and do what I need to do. I hate when it happens all of a sudden like this. Too many people around, even in the bathrooms. Now I'm late for class. Slipping the inhaler up under the hem of my spandex shorts again, I take in a welcome deep breath and release it, readjusting the books in my arm. Spinning back around, I turn right and take the next hallway, climbing the stairs up to art. It's the only class I have every day that I enjoy, but I let my friends think I hate it. Art, band, theater, they're all targets for ridicule, and I don't want to hear it from them. Gingerly opening the classroom door, I step in and look around for Ms. Till, but I don't see her. She must be in the supply closet. And I don't need another tardy, so... I walk briskly across the room and head up the aisle, raising my eyes and pausing when I see Trey. He lounges at my table, in the seat next to mine. Annoyance pricks at me. Awesome. He must be skipping chemistry, which he's already failed and has to pass in order to graduate. This is my happy hour, and he'll ruin it. I let out a small sigh and force a half smile. Hey. He pulls out my chair with one hand, relaxing back in his seat and gazing at me as I sit down. Ms. Till probably won't even notice he's not one of her students. So, I was thinking. Trey broaches as everyone chatters around us. Are you doing anything May 7th? I play cavalier as I lean back in my chair, fold my arms over my chest, and cross my legs. I seem to remember something going on that night, but I forget. He places his hand on the back of my chair, cocking his head at me. Well, do you think you can get a dress? But then I stop, seeing someone enter the room. A guy walks in, his tall form strolling across the classroom and up the aisle toward us. I don't breathe. He looks familiar. Where do I know him from? He carries nothing. No backpack, books, or even a pencil, and takes a seat at the empty table across the aisle from mine. I glance around for Ms. Till, wondering what's going on. Whoever he isn't in this class, but he just walked in as if he's always been here. Is he new? I steal a glance to my left, studying him. He relaxes in his chair, one hand resting on the table, and his eyes focused ahead of him. Black stains coat the outside of his hand, from his wrist to the top of his pinky, like mine gets when I'm drawing and resting my hand on the paper, grinding it into the ink. Hello, I hear Trey prompt. I tear my eyes away, clearing my throat. Yeah, I'm sure I can manage it. He wants me to buy a dress. Prom is May 7th, and no one else has asked me, because rumor has it Trey was asking me. He took his time, and I was starting to get worried. I wanted to go to prom, even if it is with him. I let my eyes drift to the new guy again, looking at him out of the corner of my eye. Dirt smudges his dark blue jeans, as well as his fingers and elbow, but his slate gray t-shirt is clean, and his shoes look in decent shape. His eyes are nearly hidden beneath thick lashes, and his short dark brown hair hangs just lightly over his forehead. There's a silver ring on the side of his bottom lip, catching the light. I fold my lips between my teeth as I stare at it, imagining what it feels like to have a piercing there. And maybe your hair done? Trey goes on at my right. But leave it down, because I like it down. I turn back, pulling my eyes away from the boy's mouth, and right myself as I refocus my attention. Prom, we were talking about prom. No problem, I answer. Good. He smiles and leans back. Because I know this great taco place. He bursts into laughter, the guy next to him joining in on the joke, and I warm with a moment's embarrassment. Oh, you thought he was asking you to prom? Stupid girl. But I don't pout at his attempt to make me feel like an idiot. My armor deflects, and I advance. Well, have fun. I'll be at prom with Manny. Ain't that right, Manny? I call out, kicking the leg of the boy's chair in front of me a few times, drawing the emo kid's attention. Manny Cortez jerks but keeps facing forward, trying to ignore us. Trey and his friend keep laughing, but it's focused on the weak kid now, and I can't help but feel a sliver of satisfaction. The other feelings are there too. The guilt, the disgust at myself, the pity for Manny and how I used him just now. But I amused Trey, and now Manny and any shame I feel is far below where I sit. I look down at it. I know it's there. But it's like seeing ants from an airplane. I'm in the clouds, too high for what's on the ground to be of much concern.
Yeah, Manny, you going to the prom with my girl?
Trey jokes, kicking his chair like I had done.
Huh? Huh?
And then he turns to me.
Nah, I don't even think he likes girls.
I force a half-smile, shaking my head at him and hoping he'll shut up now. Manny served a purpose. I don't want to torture him. Manny is 90 pounds at most, with hair so black it's almost blue, and a face so pale and smooth that, with the right clothes, he could easily pass for a girl. Eyeliner, black nail polish, skinny jeans, cracked and dirty Converse sneakers, check to all. He and I have gone to school together since kindergarten, and I still have the heart-shaped eraser he gave me with a Valentine's card in second grade. I was the only one who got one from him. No one knows about that, and not even Misha knows why I keep it. I raise my eyes, seeing him quietly sitting there. The bones under his black t-shirt are tense, and his head is bowed, probably hoping we won't say anything else. Probably hoping if he stays still and quiet, he'll become invisible again. I know that feeling. But something to my left pulls at me, and I glance at the new kid, who's still focused ahead. But his brow is hard and tense now, as if he's angry.
No, seriously.
Trey continues, and I reluctantly turn back as he addresses me again.
Prom. I'll pick you up at 6, limo, dinner, we'll put in an appearance at the dance. You're mine all night.
I nod, barely listening. Okay, let's go ahead and get started, Ms. Till announces, coming out of the closet and setting a caddy of art supplies on her table. She pulls down her screen, turns off the lights, and I glance to my left again, seeing the new kid just sitting there, scowling ahead. Does he have an admittance slip? A class schedule? Is he even going to introduce himself to the teacher? I'm starting to wonder if he's even real, and I'm half tempted to reach out and poke him. Am I the only one who noticed him walk in the room? Ms. Till begins going through some examples of straight line drawing while I notice Trey tear a piece of paper from my notebook.
Manny,
he whispers, balling up a piece of the paper and tossing the pea-sized wad at Manny's head.
Hey, Manny, the emo look is over, man, or does your boyfriend like it?
Trey and his friend chuckle quietly, but Manny is a statue. Trey balls up another paper, and now my guilt, heavier than before, creeps in.
Hey, man.
Trey flings the paper ball at Manny. It hits his hair before falling to the floor.
I like your eyeliner. How about letting my girl here borrow it?
A movement to my right catches my eye, and I see the new kid's hand, resting on the table, curl into a fist. Trey tosses another paper, harder this time.
Can you even find your dick anymore, faggot?
I wince. Jesus. But then, in a flash of movement, the new kid reaches over the table, grabs the back of Manny's chair, and I watch, stunned, as he pulls the chair with Manny in it back to his table and places himself between emo kid and us. Then he quickly reaches over, grabs Manny's sketchbook and box of pencils, and dumps them on his workspace, in front of his new table partner. My heart races, but I lock my jaw, trying to appear less shaken than I am. Oh my God. Students turn their head to check out the action as the new guy slams back down into his seat, doesn't say a word or cast a look at anyone, and resumes frowning. Manny's breathing is hard, his body tight and rigid at what just happened. And Trey and his friend are suddenly quiet, their eyes locked on the new guy.
Fags stick together, I guess,
Trey says under his breath. I shoot a glance at new guy out of the corner of my eye, knowing he must have heard that. But he's as still as ice, only now the muscles in his arm bulge and his jaw flexes. He's mad, and he let us know it. No one ever does that. I never get called out. Trey doesn't say anything more, and the rest of the class eventually turns back around while the teacher gets started. I try to concentrate on her instructions, but I can't. I feel him next to me, and I want to look. Who the hell is he? And then it hits me. The warehouse. Holy shit. I blink, looking at him again. It's the guy from the scavenger hunt all those months ago. I still have our pictures in my phone. Does he remember me? That's so weird. I'd never actually posted our pictures to the page we were supposed to post on. After I left him and his friend, I was so preoccupied the rest of the night, unable to stop myself from looking around for him again, that I never finished my hunt. But I never found him. After I walked away from him, he seemed to disappear. Ms. Till finishes her brief instructions, and I spend the rest of the hour stealing glances and messing around on pointless little drawings. I'd been working on a project for a week, but I ignore it today because I don't want Trey to see it. And even though this is the class I enjoy most, it's also the one I feel the least secure. Art isn't my calling, but I enjoy doing things with my hands and being creative. So it was either this or auto shop. And I wasn't spending 5 months in a room with 20 guys trying to look up my cheerleading skirt. So instead, I'm here, drawing a picture for Misha. Designing his first album cover as a surprise graduation gift. Not that he has to use it, I wouldn't expect him to, but I think he'll get a kick out of it, something to motivate him. Of course, I don't want Trey to see it and ask about it. He'll just make a joke out of something I love. No one knows about Misha Lair, not even Lila. He's mine, and too hard to put into words. I don't even want to try. Not to mention, if I don't tell anyone, he won't be as real. And it won't hurt so much when I eventually have to lose him. Which I will, if I haven't already. All good things come to an end. It's him, Ten whispers in my ear before sitting down at the lunch table with Lila, Mel, and me. That's the guy vandalizing the school. He twists his head, jerking his chin behind us, and I look up from my math homework and turn around, following his eyes. The new kid sits at a round table by himself, legs spread out underneath and crossed at the ankles, his arms folded over his chest. Black wires drape his chest, leading to the earbuds sitting in his ears, and the same hard expression from this morning is focused on the tabletop in front of him. I hold back a smile. So he is real. Ten sees him too. And then my gaze drops to his right arm, seeing the tattoos scaling down the length. A flutter hits my stomach. I hadn't seen those this morning, probably because I wasn't seated on that side of him. I couldn't make out what the pictures were, but I could tell there was script mixed in. Glancing around the room, I notice others looking at him as well. Curious sideways glances, closed whispers. Turning back around, I put my pencil to the paper again, finishing the assignment I'd gotten this morning so I won't have to do it tonight. You think he's sneaking into the school? What makes you say that? Well, look at him. Jail's in his future. Yeah, that's proof, I mumble sarcastically, still writing. Honestly, he doesn't look that bad. A little dirty, a little angry, but that doesn't imply he's a criminal. I glance behind me again, taking in his face for a moment. The muscles of his jaw, the strong dark eyes, the slant of his nose and eyebrows like he's in a constant state of displeasure. He looks more like the type who would punch you for saying hello, not spray painting song lyrics on school walls. His stare suddenly rises and he looks up. I follow his gaze. Trey is walking this way, saying something to Principal Burrows as he passes by, and New Guy watches them. Is he new? Lila asks across from me, and I see her taking in the new guy. He's not bad looking at all. What's his name?
Mason Laurent, Ten answers.
I can't help it. I say the name in my head, letting it roll across my mind. So that's the name he was trying to keep his friend from telling me at the warehouse?
He was in my physics class this morning, Ten explains.
He was in my first period too, I add, turning the textbook page and jotting down the next problem. He didn't speak. What do you know about him? Lila asks. I shrug, not looking up. Nothing. Don't care. Trey and JD sit down, one on each side of Lila, and begin digging into their sandwiches.
Hey, babe.
Trey presses a fry to my closed mouth. I grab it and fling it over my shoulder, hearing him and JD laugh while I continue my homework.
I don't think he said anything to anyone, Ten says. Mr. Klein asked him a question in physics and he just sat there.
Who?
JD asks.
Mason Laurent.
Ten gestures to the new kid behind us.
He just started today.
I wonder how he's getting in at night.
Lila says in a low voice. I drop my pencil to the table and raise my eyes, looking at her pointedly.
Don't say he like you know it's him doing the vandalism. We don't know that. And besides, he just started today.
The vandalism has been going on for over a month.
I don't want him taking the fall for something I know he's not doing.
Fine, she snaps, rolling her eyes and picking at her shaker salad. I wonder how the guy is getting in at night then.
Well, I have an idea, Ten offers. I don't think he leaves the school, actually. The one doing the vandalism, I mean. I think he stays in the school overnight.
JD bites into his hamburger again.
Why would he do that?
Because how else would you get around the alarms? Ten argues.
Think about it. The school's open late. Swim lessons at the pool, the GED class, the team's using the weight room, tutoring. He can leave after school, eat and do whatever, and make it back before the doors are locked around 9. And then he's got all night. Maybe he even lives here. The attacks are happening nearly every day now, after all.
I finish my final equation, my pencil digging slowly into the paper. It's a good point. How else would someone get around the alarms? Unless they hide out and wait for the doors to be locked. Or unless they have keys and the alarm code. There are no homeless kids at this school, I point out. I think we would know. It's not a huge high school after all.
Well, like you said, Lila shoots back. He just arrived, so we don't know anything about him yet.
I see her look over my head, and I know exactly whom she's watching.
He could have been here for the last month before starting school, and no one would have known it.
So peg the dirty new kid with no friends? I retort. What possible reason would he have for vandalizing the school? Oh wait, I forgot. I don't care. And I lean over my assignment, filling out the header, continuing, Mason Laurent is not living in the school. He's not vandalizing the walls, the lockers, or anything else. He's new, you're scheming, and I'm bored with this conversation.
We can get it out of him.
Trey chimes in.
I can sneak into my stepmom's office and check his file, see where he lives. Hell yeah,
JD agrees. The sinister tone to their voices unnerves me. Trey gets away with everything, especially since the principal is his stepmother. I close my book and notebook, piling them on top of each other. And how would that be any fun for me? Trey smiles.
What did you have in mind? Name it.
I rest my forearms on the table and turn my head over my shoulder, watching Mason Laurent. His stoic expression is confusing, as if everyone around him doesn't exist. They bustle about, passing by him, their voices carrying across his table, laughter to his left and a dropped tray to his right, but a bubble surrounds him. Life carries on outside of it, but nothing breaches it. But I feel, even though he responds to nothing going on around him, he's aware of it. He's aware of everything, and a chill runs down my arms. Turning back to Trey, I take a deep breath, shaking it off. Do you trust me?
Nah, but I'll give you a long leash.
JD laughs, and I rise from the table, pushing back my chair.
Where are you going?
Lila asks. I spin around and walk for Mason, answering over my shoulder.
I want to hear him talk.
I head over to his table, a small round four-seater on the outside of the room, and rest my ass on the edge, gripping the table with my hands at my sides. The boy's eyes catch my thighs and slowly rise up my body, resting on my face. I can hear the beat of drums and guitar pounding out of his earbuds, but he just sits there, the indents between his eyebrows growing deeper. Reaching over, I gently tug out his earbuds and cast a look over my shoulder at my friends, all of them watching us. They think you're homeless, I tell him, turning back and seeing his eyes drift from them up to me. But you're not eating, and you don't speak. I think you're a ghost. I give him a mischievous smile and drop the earbuds, placing my hand over his heart. His warmth immediately courses through my hand, making my stomach flip a little. Nope, scratch that, I add, pushing forward. I feel a heartbeat, and it's getting faster. Mason just watches me, as if waiting for something. Maybe he wants me to disappear, but he hasn't pushed me away yet. I take my hand off his chest and lean back again. I remember you, you know? You were at the scavenger hunt in February, at the warehouse in Thunder Bay. He still doesn't answer, and I'm starting to wonder if I have it wrong. The guy that night was a few words, but he at least ended up being friendly. How do you toy with someone who won't engage? Do you like to go to the drive-in, Mason? I ask. That's your name, right? I look down and fiddle with his pen, trying to act coy. The weather's getting nice enough for it. Maybe you'd like to come with my girlfriends and me sometime. Wanna give me your number? His chest caves with every exhale, and I feel my skin start to hum as he just holds my eyes. His deep green pools glow with a fire I can't place. Anger? Fear? Desire? What the hell is he thinking, and why won't he speak? I force the lump down my throat, feeling like I'm waiting for the jack to pop out of the box. You don't like people? I press, leaning in and whispering, or you don't like girls. Miss Trevorrow, a stern female voice I recognize as Principal Burroughs calls, off the table. I turn my head to acknowledge her, but then, all of a sudden, hands grab my waist and pull me forward. I gasp, shocked, as I land in Mason's lap, straddling him. I like girls, he whispers in my ear, and my heart is pounding so hard it hurts. Then the tip of his tongue glides up my neck, and I'm frozen, breathing a mile a minute as heat races through my blood. Fuck. But you? His deep voice and hot breath fall over the skin of my neck. You kind of taste like shit. What? And then he stands up, and I tumble off his lap, landing on the floor. I shoot my hands out, catching myself. What the hell? Laughter echoes around me, and I dart my head around, seeing a few people at nearby tables chuckling as they stare at me. Walls close in around me, and I burn with embarrassment. I don't have to turn around to know Lila is probably smiling as well. Son of a bitch. And then I watch as Mason Laurent grabs his notebook and pen, drapes his earbuds around his neck, and walks around me, leaving the cafeteria without another word. Asshole! What the hell is its problem? I stand up, brushing off my skirt, and head back to my table. That wasn't the first time anyone's laughed at my expense, but it will be the last. Chapter 4. Ryan. I'm going to Banana Republic. Ten rushes up and hooks an arm around my neck. Wanna come? I shake my head, taking a left down the hall. I need to get home. It's my turn to make dinner tonight. The school is empty, and we just finished practice, but while everyone else is showering and getting ready for wherever they're rushing off to, I'm still in my shorts, sports bra, and tank top. I just want to get out of here. This day threw me off track, and I need to regroup. That new kid, Mason, is a real piece of work, and I'd had to turn off my phone to ignore the Facebook notifications after lunch. Thank goodness no one had time to snap a picture of him dumping me on my ass in the cafeteria. But that didn't stop Lila from posting a meme online, joking about it and tagging me. Of course, she was only teasing. Whatever. I need to get home anyway. I was able to get pre-calc done at lunch, but I still have some questions from the novel study in government to do tonight. Whoa, is that your locker? I hear Ten say. I look down the hallway and spot a pile of belongings spilling onto the floor, about right where my locker is located. Ten releases me, and we both jog up to the mess, seeing my locker door hanging open and part of it bent, as if it's been pried open with a crowbar or something. What the hell? I kneel down, my lungs emptying as I sift through my clothes, iPod, and a mountain of papers laying astray from the folders they were neatly organized in previously. What the hell happened? Ten bursts out. Is anything missing? I swing the locker door open wide and survey the remaining contents. The little pink shelves and overhead lamp I'd installed are still in there, as well as my umbrella and fleece jacket I keep in there just in case. I kneel down, surveying the items on the floor, and see that all of my books are accounted for, as well as the Louboutins and the shirts I hide for my mom. I don't think so, I say breathlessly, still confused. Why break into my locker and not take anything? I look around nervously, noticing no one else's locker has been vandalized that I can tell. I wonder what that means. Ten says. What? I look up, following his gaze. He holds my locker door closed, showing me the word written in black Sharpie on the front. Empty. I stare at it, confused. What? My lungs feel heavy, and I search my brain, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Empty? And why just my locker? I gather up all of my belongings and pack them in my duffel, completely creeped out that someone was doing this while I was at practice. The office is closed now, but I'm definitely reporting this in the morning. Slipping on my black fleece jacket, I head out to the parking lot with Ten and climb into my car as he hops into his. I immediately lock my doors. I'll have to get a new locker tomorrow, too. I can't carry all this shit with me every day, even if there's only a little over a month left of school. God damn it. Who would root around in my stuff? Not everyone likes me. In fact, Ten is the only person who probably doesn't have a motive to piss me off. But no one in particular sticks out. And what if it happens again? I quickly drive home and pull into my driveway, parking in the garage and seeing no other cars home yet. My sister is probably still in class, and my mother's car is parked at the airport, waiting for her when she gets back tomorrow morning. I stare down at my phone screen, sending a quick reply to her text that she sent earlier. I'll be home late tomorrow. Cheer, swim, I type. "Kay, dinner will be waiting," she replies. "Don't forget to pack extra food tomorrow." Yeah, yeah. I stuff my phone in my duffel. A couple nights a week, I stay late at school for cheer practice and then to teach swim lessons for a couple of hours afterward. I have a small break in between to eat something, since I won't be home for dinner, and to get some homework done. Closing the garage door, I gather my bags and enter the kitchen through the door off the carport, grabbing a water bottle out of the fridge before dashing up the stairs. I'll feel better after a shower. With what happened to my locker and the episode in the cafeteria today, it's been a long time since I've had that feeling. People don't laugh at me, and guys like him don't put me in my place. I'm not going to let him in my head like I let them in all those years ago. I'm stronger now. I swing my bedroom door open and walk in, my bags falling from my hands. What the fuck? What the hell are you doing? I shout. Mason, the new guy, sits in my desk chair, leaning back with his hands locked behind his head. I hear music and glance over at my iPod dock, seeing that he's playing Garbage's Stupid Girl. He smirks and stares at me, relaxing as if he hasn't broken into my house and planted his ass somewhere it doesn't belong. Hello? I bark. What are you doing in my room, asshole? Exhaling a slow breath, he jerks his chin at me. I went to what I assume is your sister's room first. That seems more you. Hot pink princess bullshit with the zebra print bedding. I quickly close my door, not wanting my sister to get home and see him in here. How did you get in? But he ignores me and keeps going. However, I don't think it was your name in purple neon lights above the bed. He starts laughing, probably at my sister's stupid narcissistic decorating, and stands up. Ryan, right? He asks, looking around my room. I must say, this is not at all what I expected. I'm a lot of what you're not expecting, dickhead. Get out. Make me. I fist my hands. How did you get in? Through the front door. He steps toward me. So where is it? I pinch my eyebrows together, confused. Where's what? My shit. His teeth are bared, his smile gone. His shit? What's he talking about? Get out, I yell. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. You seem nervous. You think? I retort. I don't like strange guys in my house, and I really don't like anyone in my room. Don't care, he replies, looking bored. You took something of mine, two things of mine, actually, and I want them back. No, I didn't. Now get out. He reaches behind himself and pulls something out of the back of his jeans, holding it up. My face falls and a knot tightens in my stomach. Shit, my notebook. A large white leather-bound diary of rants and pity parties I've thrown for myself over the past 3 years, and something I don't want anyone to see, ever. Every bad thought or feeling I've ever had about myself, my family, and my friends that I couldn't voice out loud is in that book. How did he find it? Under the mattress isn't exactly a novel idea, you know, he says. And yes, I read that part, and the other one, and the other one. My heart pounds in my ears, and a scream creeps its way up my throat. I lunge for him. I grab hold of the book, but he shoves me back, and I stumble onto the bed, his body coming down on mine. I grunt and cry out, trying to get the book. He reaches for something, and then my scissors from my desk is pointing at my face. I freeze, staring at the tip. Don't worry, he taunts in a dark voice. I won't make sure this falls into your mom's hands. I'm going to rip out every fucking page and plaster them all over school, So listen loud and clear, you stupid cunt. I'm done talking to you, and I'm done looking at you. I want the locket, and I want the piece of paper you took at the cove.
The cove? I gasp under the weight of his body. What the hell is he talking about?
And then I pause as it hits me. The cove. Last night. The piece of paper.
I want a lick while you still taste like you.
And then today, you taste like shit. I stare at him, dumbfounded. Oh my God. That was his room? I was right. There was someone there in the tunnel. He saw us. And then I widen my eyes. He was the one who broke into my locker. That's why nothing was missing. He didn't find what he was looking for. He darts to my side and snaps the scissors, and I wince as he brings the scissors back up, a few of my light brown hairs floating in the air.
Stop! I yell.
His dark green eyes narrow on me, threatening and cutting right through me. I growl, grappling for my pillow and reaching inside, pulling out a folded, worn piece of paper. I shove it at his chest. He takes the paper. Now, the necklace.
I didn't take a necklace, I shout. Just the paper.
He snaps the scissors at my hair again, and I scream.
Damn it, I told you, I didn't take it.
Ten was with me. He took it.
Shit.
What? Mason growls, probably seeing the realization on my face. I breathe hard, flexing my jaw.
My friend was with me. I'll get it, all right? I'll get it. Now get off of me.
He pauses, staring down at me. But eventually he pushes off the bed and tosses the scissors onto the desk, sliding the poem into his back pocket. I shoot up, grabbing at my ponytail and finding the small bit of hair that was snipped, only about half an inch from a few strands. I scowl at him.
Prick.
Tomorrow, he orders, ignoring my insult.
The parking lot after school.
And then he holds up my notebook.
I'm keeping this as insurance.
No, I don't trust you.
What do you know, Rox?
He smiles.
Something we have in common. I don't trust you either.
He curls the notebook, squeezing it in his fist.
Now don't waste any more of my time. Tomorrow.
I grind my teeth, watching him walk toward the door. He stops in the doorway and turns around, taking a last look around my room.
You know, I really do like your room, he muses. Maybe if you were more like this at school, people wouldn't talk behind your back so much.
He walks out, slamming the door behind him, and my face falls. I stare at the word written on the back of my door in large chalk letters that I didn't write. Fraud. The next morning, I make my way to Ten's locker, but only after stopping by the school office and reporting my own, vandalized, and getting a new one assigned. Students crowd the halls, and I hold my books in my arm and turn inward, trying to avoid any attention. Do you have it? I ask, without saying hello first. He glances up from his locker and sighs, looking a little embarrassed. I'd texted him last night, demanding he bring the locket today. Reaching into the pocket of his knee-length shorts, he pulls out a long chain with a circular silver locket hanging off it. I take it, instantly feeling a little relief at having what that asshole wants. Now I can get my notebook back.
Why would you take this? I snap. Did he think it would go well with his J. Crew t-shirts?
But Ten just shrugs.
It looked like an antique. I thought maybe it might be worth something.
I slip the necklace into my pocket. Klepto.
How did you know I took it anyway?
Because the hot new guy, who also happens to be squatting in an abandoned theme park, broke into my bedroom last night, cut my hair, and threatened to expose my hideous inner musings about all of my friends if I didn't get it back.
Yeah, no.
I'll see you at lunch, I say, ignoring his question and turning around to head to Art. Digging the necklace back out of my pocket as I walk, I flip it over, studying the aged silver and intricate detail around the large moonstone set in the middle. Ten is right. It looks like an antique. There are several scratches, and the metal feels thicker, more solid than your typical Target jewelry. What does the necklace mean to Mason Laurent, though? I open the locket, slowly climbing the stairwell, the people jogging and laughing around me a distant echo. But as soon as I pop it open, I dig in my eyebrows, seeing not pictures as I expected, but a tiny folded up piece of paper. Taking it out, I unwrap it and turn it over, reading the words.
Close your eyes. There's nothing to see out here.
I slow to a stop, staring at the note and saying the words to myself again. It sounds familiar, like I've heard them before, or said them or something. The second bell rings, our one-minute warning, and I fold the paper back up, stuffing it into the locket and closing it. Everyone around me hustles up and down the stairs, and I jog to my class, slipping the necklace back into my jean shorts. Who does the locket belong to? A family member? A girlfriend? Maybe he stole it. He's living at the Cove, after all, and judging by the state of his hands and jeans, it doesn't look like a parent is watching over him. He probably doesn't have any money, and if he can break into my house without leaving a scratch, then I'm sure he's done it before. I'm tempted to seek him out now and get my notebook back, but it's probably in his locker or in his car, and I don't trust him to be able to do a quick exchange without others spotting me talking to the weirdo who dumped me on my ass yesterday. I don't want to be seen with him again. And luckily, I don't see him in art today. Perhaps he got out of the class. Or, my heart sinks a little, maybe he's not at school today. Agitation boils under my skin. If I have to go back to that junkyard again and search him out, I'll be pissed. I'm getting that book back. After art, I head to English 4, carrying my text, notebook, and copy of Lolita. But as soon as I step into the room, I spot him sitting in the row to the left of mine, one desk back. Relief and a touch of annoyance both hit me. He wasn't in this class yesterday. Is he going to be in any more of my classes? But he doesn't seem to see me. Just like yesterday in art, the guy simply sits there, staring ahead with a slight scowl on his face, as if this is all such an inconvenience to him. I take my seat, noticing his jeans and black t-shirt are actually clean today. Mr. Foster fires up his projector, the screen of his laptop appearing on the big white board in front of the class, and he begins making the rounds, handing back our latest essays. The final bell rings, and the class lowers their voices, quietly chattering as the teacher walks up and down the aisles.
"So, I'm going to go out on a limb," Foster says, stopping at my desk and holding my paper as he peers down at me.
"Did you actually read the book, or did you read reviews?"
I hear a snort behind me, from JD, no doubt, and I smile. "You asked for an analysis of the story, so I watched the movie," I explain, plucking my Anna Karenina paper out of his hand. "Spoiler alert, there was a lot of sex in it." Laughter breaks out, and I feel a rush hit my veins, pumping me up after my minor humiliation yesterday. Mr. Foster and I constantly go head-to-head, and while art may be the class I enjoy the most, Foster is my favorite teacher. He encourages us to use our voice and is one of the only adults to talk to his students like adults. "I asked for an analysis of the novel, Ryan." "And I tried," I tell him. "I honestly did, but it was depressing and in a pointless way. What was I supposed to learn? Women don't cheat on your husbands in 19th century Russia, or you'll be cast out of society and forced to throw yourself in front of a train?" I sit up in my seat. "Got it. And the next time I'm in 19th century Russia, I'm going to remember it." I hear JD chuckle again behind me and more giggles break out in the room. But Foster lowers his voice, looking me deep in the eyes.
"You're better than this," he whispers.
I stare at him for a moment, seeing the plea in his eyes. Seeing how highly he thinks of my intellect and how angry he is that I don't make better use out of it. He backs away, moving on to the next student, but still speaking to me.
"Read Jane Eyre and redo it," he demands.
I should quietly accept my punishment and be grateful he's giving me another chance instead of accepting the C that's written on my Anna Karenina paper right now. But I can't resist smarting off some more. "Can I at least read something written in the past 100 years? I ask. Something where a middle-aged man isn't conning an 18-year-old girl into committing bigamy? He turns his head, a stern expression on his face.
"I think you've dominated the class's attention long enough, Ms. Trevorrow."
"In fact," I go on, "I'm seeing a trend this semester. Anna Karenina, Lolita, Girl with a Pearl Earring, Jane Eyre, all stories featuring older men and younger women. Something you want to tell us, Mr. Foster?" I wink twice, teasing the older man. The class's laughter is louder this time, and I can see Foster's chest rise with a huge, exasperated breath.
"I'd like the report tomorrow," he says. "Do you understand?"
"Absolutely," I answer, and then drop my voice to a mumble. "There are tons of Jane Eyre movies." The students around me snicker under their breaths because, of course, I can't read a whole novel and write a report on it with cheer and swim tonight. I end my taunting, satisfied that I won that argument. In their eyes, anyway. The air is cool and fresh as it fills my lungs. What about Twilight? Someone calls out. I pause at the deep voice behind me. Mr. Foster stands in front of his desk and looks up, focusing over my head.
Twilight? He asks.
Yeah, rocks? Mason prompts me. Did you like Twilight? My heart starts beating harder. What is he doing? But I turn my head to the side, fixing him with a bored expression. Sure, when I was 12, you? The corner of his mouth lifts, and I'm once again drawn to the piercing on his lip. I'll bet you loved it, he says, the entire class listening. I'll bet it was what got you interested in reading. And I'll even bet you were at the movie's opening night. Did you have an Edward t-shirt, too? A few chuckles go off around me, and the little high I felt a moment ago is sucked away at the sight of his gloating eyes. How could he have known that? I picked up a Twilight paperback when I was younger because Robert Pattinson was on the cover, and hey, I was 12, so... But immediately after reading it, I asked my mom to go buy me all the books, and I spent the next 2 weeks reading them with every free moment I got. I arch an eyebrow, looking at the teacher. While it's fascinating that it's finally speaking and all, I'm again wondering what the point is.
The point is, Mason answers, wasn't Edward like 100 years older than Bella?
86. See, he keeps going, you're judging stories about older men and younger women as some sick, superficial perversion on the male's part, when actually it was quite common during those times for men to wait until they had finished their education and established a career before being ready to support a wife. He pauses and then continues. A wife, which was almost always younger, because she needed to bear many children, as society dictated. And yet your precious Edward Cullen was over 100 years old, still in high school, living with his parents, and trying to get in the pants of a minor in the 21st century. The whole class erupts in laughter, and my stomach sinks. I catch sight of Mason out of the corner of my eye, leaning his desk forward, closer to mine, and whispering, "But he was hot, so I guess that's all that's important, right?" I keep staring ahead, the knots in my stomach pulling tighter and tighter. Sure, Edward was decades older than Bella, but the fact that he was good-looking had nothing to do with her loving him anyway. Mason continues his attack. Now, if you looked like most 100-year-old men looked, he calls out, and I see him stand up. It wouldn't have been romantic, would it? There would be no Bella and Edward. He walks up to the front of the class and rounds the teacher's desk, gesturing to the laptop. May I? The teacher nods, looking wary, but allowing it. Mason leans down, and I refuse to look as he types something into the search engine. But when more laughter breaks out, louder this time, I can't help myself. I glance up at the screen and instantly feel anger curl my fingers into a fist. A huge image of an old man, withered with wrinkles, missing teeth, and bald but with wiry silver hair sprouting from the top of his nose, smiles back at us. And I glare at Mason, who grins back. Old geezer Edward is a happy guy, he gloats, because he's about to get naked with Bella. Aw, yeah, JD hollers, and everyone loses control. Students double over laughing, and their amusement surrounds me like a wall closing in. Everything is getting smaller, and I start to feel the space in my lungs shrink as I pull harder to take in air. I clench my teeth together. Motherfucker. Mason crosses his arms over his chest, looking at me like a meal he can't wait to eat again. Shake your pom-poms, Rox, he says. You just reminded all of us that love is truly only skin deep. I walk as quickly as I can, a cool sweat spreading down my neck and back as I dive into the girls' locker room. The weight on my chest gets heavier, and I pass girls undressing for PE as I slip into one of the shower stalls, draw the curtain closed, and turn on the water. I step to the left so I don't get hit with the spray. The white noise of the water shields me from listening ears, and I grab my inhaler from my pocket, taking two quick pumps and leaning back against the shower wall, closing my eyes. 4 years. I haven't had a fucking attack triggered by panic in 4 years. It's always exercise-induced. My lungs start to open up, and I slowly breathe in and out, forcing myself to calm down. What the hell is wrong with me? The guy's not a threat. I can handle this. So he was challenging me. So what? Am I going to flip out every time that happens? Sooner or later, I'll leave Safe Falcon's Well, and I'll no longer be Queen Bee. I'm acting like a baby.
But for a moment, everything went dark. Slowly, the world in my vision got smaller and smaller, like I was in a tunnel going backward. The light ahead of me, Mason, Mr. Foster, the other students, became tiny as the darkness ate up the room. And I felt completely alone. Just like before.
All right, everyone, Ms. Wilkins, my fourth grade teacher, calls as we line up at the door inside the classroom. If you're staying in for recess, there's no talking. You're working.
Then she looks up to us.
The rest of you, walk, please.
The line leader pushes through the door and everyone bolts, running outside to the playground. Some students dash for the tether balls, others for the bars. And some stroll around the blacktop, figuring out what they want to do. Everyone passes me by, and I slow to a walk, fidgeting and watching them as they find their groups and begin playing. The sun is hot, and I slowly step into the chaos, looking around and not sure where to go or who to talk to. This happens every day. Girls run up to other girls, smiling and talking. Boys play with other boys, tossing balls back and forth and climbing the equipment. Some of my classmates sit on the grass and play with little things they snuck into school, and everyone has found each other, pairing off. But no one's looking for me. I shuffle my feet, feeling my stomach twist into knots. I hate recess. I should have just stayed in the classroom and colored or wrote in my journal or something. I want them to know I'm here, though. I want them to see me. I don't like being forgotten. I look over at Shannon Bell and a few other girls from class. Their hair and clothes always so cool and pretty. Why can't I ever look like that? I run my hands down my knee-length skirt and polo shirt, looking like such a good girl. My mom always pulls my hair back in a ponytail, but I want to curl it like them. I lick my lips, swallowing the big lump in my throat, and walk over to them. Hi, I say, feeling like I can't breathe. They stop talking and look at me, not smiling. I gesture to Shannon's hand. I like your nail polish. Actually, I don't. Yellow grosses me out, but my mom said complimenting people is a good way to make friends, so... Shannon lets out a little scoff, looking embarrassed that her friends see me talking to her. She shoots a look to them. I feel an invisible hand pushing me away from them. They want me gone, don't they? But I force a smile and try harder. Hey, I tell another girl, seeing her Mary Jane's, we have the same shoes. And I look down at